Blog Talk Radio.
Are y'all ready? Are y'all ready, fellas?
Yes, sir.
Crank
let's
it
get
up.
It.
Crank it up. Pump up the volume, right, bro.
I'm just making sure y'all ready to go.
Oh, yeah, always.
You ready?
Oh, that song gives me life.
Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's the franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, my time is now.
In case you forgot or fell off, I'm still high.
I'm just making sure the fellows are ready, man, because it is a jam-packed night. Man, woo!
We're ready, Doc.
The Talking Sports with 12th Man. We are officially ready to go. Man, on a Tuesday.
It is
June the 16th, and you are Talking Sports with the 12th Man, as always. I am yours truly, Andre Peterson, joined by my fellas, Jaquan Jenkins and Mr. Robert Ford. So without further ado, we always got to check in with the fellas. I'm the dish man kind of throwing it out. So checking in first and foremost, JQ, how you feeling this evening, sir?
Oh, I'm good, man. I was hoping for a little bit more competitive game, but like we talked about earlier, that depth is just wearing Cleveland out.
Man, good call. And without further ado, Rob Ford, what's going on, sir? Welcome to the A, man. How you doing, sir?
Man, doing great. Couldn't be better. Ready to get this party started.
The fellows are all here. Now we'd like to invite everyone else, like we always do, to call on the show. The number for guests, 424-243-9519. That's the number to call on the show. Finally, we are available on Facebook. You go to facebook.com/12thmansports. We put in Talking Sports with the 12th Man. You'll find us. Man, we've been staying pretty busy updating social media, so that's what we like to do. And then finally, we are on Twitter. If you go to the number 12, THMAN Sports, you will find us in that space as well. So, man, a lot of fun things. I know we got a lot of things to talk about, fellas, like we always do. The NBA is front and center. I know we're kind of engaged with the game so far. Bron's trying to do his thing, but just looks like he is didn't have enough, endurance, it seems.
He's
like,
gas.
Man, because they're just, yeah, he's gas. They're getting worn down. We'll talk about that for sure. First and foremost, I think Robert's like to kind of throw us off our game here. You want to throw a quick note about the Padres firing Bud Black in the middle of the season. Rob, I'm going to throw it to you, sir, because, what do you guys say about this, sir?
Well, I thought JQ was our baseball expert, Bud Black, is going into his ninth season. As Padres manager, they never made the playoffs in these nine seasons. The Padres went out and spent a lot of money this offseason. Supposedly the offseason winner, and they're still a game under 500. It's one of those moves. They're in a tough division, too. You got the Dodgers and the Giants. Both of those teams would be in the playoffs if the playoffs started today in baseball. So that's a very tough division for the Padres to crack, but they went ahead and spent a lot of money this offseason, and they're not living up to expectations. So that was the writing on the wall for Bud Black in nine seasons and not going to the playoffs as well.
JQ, your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, this was the first year that I think they really expected to contend, and you spoke on it, Rob, to compete with the Dodgers and the Giants, and, they expanded their payroll to $108 million this year. You go out and get, Justin Upton, you go get Matt Kemp, you go get Will Myers, you go get James Shields, you go get Bud Norris. You expect to not be a game under 500 at this point. And I really think the tipping point was the series here in Atlanta where they just, even against a bad Atlanta bullpen, they couldn't close the deal against them. And I think that put the writing on the wall for them. I think that's a lot of pressure in the first year if you actually anticipating making the playoffs and making a push, even though you got some good players, to not give them the full season to try to right the ship, so to speak. Because, again, remember, it's 162 games. They have a lot of talent. But I guess management felt they weren't getting the most bang for their buck, so they decided to change course. And for me, it's rare that you see a team fire their manager in the middle of the year and then, make a run. Sometimes it happens, but it doesn't happen on the norm. So it's a bit of a panic move, and I don't know what else to say about it. You know, you still got to have the players play, and you can put them in certain places in the lineup. You can put the shift on. You can, you know, put the lefty in the seventh inning against the left-handed batters. But if they don't get the job done on the field, then it's not going to matter. So he was the fall guy, really, for the players not living up to the expectations. And I forgot about Craig Kimbrell. So, you know, they went and spent a lot of money and got a lot of good players, and they just don't have a lot to show for it.
Yeah, good call on both accounts, too. You guys hit it right the nail on the head. I think it may have been a panic move, but it is tough because, yeah, they got a lot of talent, man. The Matt Campbell can talk about. Justin Upton, you know, obviously for the Braves of last year, they picked up him. Craig Kimbrell. You know, Melvin Upton, we're going to call him whatever way it is. And, you know, I know. It's just one of the situations where maybe it's a panic move in that regard, too. But they got a lot of talent, didn't kind of start the way they wanted to start out. But we will see how that plays out. It is a long season, like we always talk about. And we'll see what happens with the Padres going on, if this was a move that they were – look back and regret, or if they, they're going to actually look back and say it was kind of jump-starting their season as well. All right.
Well, you know what? One quick thing about that. I wonder if pulling the plug on the manager will have them, you know, do a fire sale and try to get rid of some of these high-priced veterans and try to, you know, rebuild only after a half year trying to go for the gusto. So just wanted to throw that out. I wonder, you know, come the trade deadline, what will happen.
Gotcha. Good call, Joe.
We'll
see how it plays out for sure.
Good point.
Good points, man. I love it. We finally got here. Man, Bron doing his thing. Rob, is he the most valuable loser? I like that. MVL. What you got? What you got, Rob? What you got, sir?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. And, you know, I'm a LeBron fan, and some people may say I may be taking up for him a little bit. But I just think he's had a lot of bad luck, and what I mean by that is as far as is the, you know, just the rosters that he's been on. Just by comparison, you know, Michael Jordan, you know, he won 6 titles. A lot of people forget that Michael Jordan was like 1-9 in playoffs prior to having Scottie Pippen his side. But you know, once he's got Scottie Pippen, he always has Scottie Pippen every time he made it to the finals. And he either had Dennis Rodman or Horace Grant. You know, you can look at the Kobe and Shaq thing. They had each other for 3 of those titles. And, you know, Shaq was the most dominant player in the league. And if you look at LeBron by comparison, in 2007, he went to the NBA Finals with a bunch of scrubs. This year, he made it to the NBA Finals with a bunch of scrubs. And, look, even go back to his Miami Heat. He never had Dwayne Wade at his best. And, you know, Dwayne Wade was very injury-prone during those years with the Miami Heat. And, you know, and they still won 2 titles out of those 4 years. But he never had the kind of supporting cast that a Jordan had, that a Kobe or Shaq had. And so I'm going to say, you know, I guess he is the most valuable loser, but he never did quite had the stack rosters. Or even you go back to Magic Johnson, he never had Kareem. He never had Worthy. He just haven't had those kind of players. Yeah, Big Game James. Yeah, North Carolina all day long. And he just never had that kind of supporting cast in his career that some of those other big-name players have. But, you know, if you look at, you look at the stats, you know, arguably, LeBron James is just as good as any of those guys, but he just hasn't had quite had the supporting cast that those guys have had.
KQ.
Absolutely. The only one I can put on him is I don't think they should have lost to Dallas. But, you know, when, his first time in Cleveland, your best players are Mo Williams and Diane Marshall. You have no business even being in the finals, let alone winning. And now you're talking about, you know, Shumpert and J.R. Smith and Dellavedova. And I give you Tristan Thompson to a point, but – He like you said, he doesn't have the staff. I said if you switch him and Curry out, they would have swept Cleveland if LeBron was on Golden State and Curry was on Cleveland. I mean, it's what he's doing, the stat line that he's putting up, 2 triple-doubles, and not, you know, stupid triple-doubles where it's like 11, 10, and 10. You know, you're talking about 40, 16, and 12. You know, monster stat lines where he's only not only getting his, but getting everybody else involved and keeping plays alive with the rebounds. I mean, what more can you ask him to do? He's barely resting at the end of quarters and, you know, and in TV timeouts. he's clearly the most valuable loser. I hate to refer to him like that, but he wasn't really, you know,
doesn't
you can't
sound
go
good.
Into a gun. You can't go into a gunfight with a knife, you know, and that's what he's done. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even have a machete. He's got like a Swiss Army knife against an M16, and he just doesn't have a chance. And I'm amazed at the fact that they almost stole game one. They still won two games, and, you know, Golden State pulled away from them late in the last game, and this game, it just looks like the fatigue is set in for them, and I think reality is starting to set in on Cleveland, on the team and the city, that it's just not meant to be this year.
Absolutely.
I'm the best player in the NBA, though. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm saying, man.
He is, though. He can't win for losing. If he says he isn't, people are saying it's false modesty. If he says he is, then he's being arrogant. They just don't want to like him. And I think part of that is just media driven. They feel like ESPN is all over him, which they are, but they should be all over him because he's the best player in the game. Let's not forget how the media was all over Michael Jordan, and, you know, he could do no wrong in their eyes either. So, you know, let's take a step back and breathe. You know, he doesn't have the talent that everybody else has available to him in these finals.
Getting back to that topic, I know that's one of our topics is the comment that that LeBron James made the other night. And, you know, normally, you know, I'm the person that believes in humility, but I believe in the way that LeBron James said it the other night. I think it was actually just a more so a confidence in himself and not necessarily an arrogant. But that's just the way I took it. I didn't take it as him being arrogant. I took it as him just having confidence in his own abilities. And
I agree.
You know, normally, I'm a person that believes in humility, but I didn't take it as him being arrogant, just my personal opinion.
Correct. I agree. And it's not like you see him show people up on the court, even though he has all the talent to show people on the court if he wanted to. He doesn't do that. He tries to play the game the right way. But if you ask him that, he's got to feel like he's confident. He can't, you know, fold up his tent and go home. There are games still left to be played. They're trying to win a championship.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what he's supposed to say. He's trying to get his teammates pumped up as well. So, you know, I didn't take it like that either, Rob. I took it as I'm not going to sit here and lay down for these guys. If they want this title, they got to come take it. I'm the best player in the game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, fellas, man, you guys are firing on all cylinders, man. I love it. It's been tough, man. He has had a Herculean effort, to say the least, to come in and to take this team with a bunch of scrubs again. I would say, like, he's had some bad luck, like you said, JQ, because, I mean, man, you know, Kevin Love's been hurt. He's supposed to help him out. You also look at Kyrie Irving getting hurt. So he just hasn't had the squad. And it's just tough, man. He's having some triple doubles. Second player since Jerry West to have a triple double. I mean, just amazing. And then yet and still, he's going to come up short. It looks like right now, a couple of days last week. I know Robert asked a question. What do you think, guys? And me and JQ, we're kind of trepidous. We're like, man, you know, Cleveland was out physicaling. You know, Golden State, we were like, man, it may look like a different series. And now, you know, we called it, whoever wins that game four, and then we saw what happened. It looks like Golden State decided, hey, let's just go ahead and just outrun them. And they did. They changed up. They switched Draymond Green, making him play center. And now, like we talked about, me and JQ were talking about earlier, Rob, it seems like that the Golden State just running them out of the gym. And now Cleveland's, there's no way they're going to catch up, you know. So, what an interesting – that's kind of our finals update, too. I don't know if you want to add to that, JQ, as well, sir.
Well, I think what happened is that Golden State thought they could just put their jerseys on and come out and know we have the most talent at this point with Kevin Love being out. And we know Kyrie was playing in game one, but you knew he wasn't going to be 100%. And I think they felt like they could just come out and roll the ball out, put on their jersey, and that our depth would shine through from the jump. And Cleveland came out with a chip on their shoulder, like, you counted us out. And they came to play, and I think they finally woke Golden State up. And I think Steve Kerr, you know, he has that championship pedigree from his playing days that I think he was able to get in their ear, and it might have been the best thing for him. Like, yeah, see, now you need to listen to me. It's not going to be a cakewalk. They still have LeBron James. You've got to come out here and pay attention to the detail and do your job and execute. And I think it woke him up, and now you're seeing them firing on mostly all cylinders. But, again, Golden State's still not scoring 110 points a game. They're not blowing them out the gym. You know, Cleveland is doing what they can do, but they're spending so much energy on defense. You can just tell in their jump shots, they have no leg in their jump shots. It's front rim, and then they overshoot and then it's back rim. Nothing looks pure. No, you don't have any confidence that when that shot goes up, that it's going to be a swish. So, you know, pass off to Golden State for waking up, and I think Cleveland made them wake up, and it is what it is. Golden State just has the most talent at this point.
Rob, before you hold that thought, Rob, I got a question for you real quick, because we're going to talk about that, and you kind of segued into some coaching news that's been happening. Rob, do you think that if Mark Jackson is the coach of Golden State, did they get this far, or is it the difference of degrees with having a Steve Kerr made that much of a difference that we're seeing Golden State in the finals? Go ahead, Rob. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I think the easy answer to that is no. I mean, obviously we'll never know what the correct mm-hmm. answer is, but the easy okay. answer would be no. And, but, you know, the one thing I'm going to give Steve Kerr a lot of credit for is he went out and hired some experienced assistant coaches as well. And I think that's where Mark Jackson was a little bit stubborn in that area. When you look at Elvin Gentry, who's really an offensive guru, and Steve Kerr has the ability to also listen to the assistant coaches. Elvin Gentry's been a coach in his league. Elvin Gentry is a great offensive mind. It was actually Gentry's idea to go small, you know, and try to speed up the pace against Cleveland. And Steve Kerr at least has the ability to listen and not have a big ego and go what he feels is best. And then you hire Ryan Adams, who's a defensive guru, been under Tom Thibodeau for a lot of years in both Chicago and Boston. And so I think he got some experienced assistants to come on board. And then you add his playing pedigree along with being under Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich and that. And but I think all of that combined has made him to turn out to be a terrific first-year coach. And like I said, having the ability to listen is very important.
Yeah.
Go ahead, JQ. I was going to say something. Go ahead. He saw you, man. Go ahead real quick.
Yeah, no, real quick. So, yes, and with a lot of stories I heard is that Mark Jackson had to have the biggest voice, and he was kind of intimidated by his assistants. He didn't want them to feel like they were usurping his authority. So that's what I agree with Rob. You know, it's particularly between having a good CEO who listens to his staff and hires good staff members and brings them along and listens to their input and will go with their input over his own input if it's better for the team, where I think Steve Kerr excelled at that where Mark Jackson didn't.
That's a great call, too. And what a difference a coach makes to kind of pull back the old school from Lakers, from Dale Harris to Phil Jackson. And then, you know, you can tell the difference as far as what happened because Dale Harris had a pretty good team. And here comes Phil Jackson. They end up winning, you know. So good point to both you guys, JQ, Rob. You know, Steve Kerr brought a lot of systems they learned from the Suns, from the Spurs. And it seemed like last year that the Golden State had all this offensive firepower, but they were struggling. They couldn't score as many points, man. So you've got the Splash Brothers, and they just exploded this year. So, you know, like you said, kudos to Steve Kerr coming in, you know, putting his ego on the shelf, and look at what happened, man. And I don't think anyone can confuse Mark Jackson with being an X and O's guys, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he almost went with a football mentality. He got him an offensive guru. He got him a defensive guru as assistant coaches, you know, with Elvin Gentry and Ryan Adams. And he let Gentry be his offensive coordinator. He let Adams be his defensive coordinator. He took that mindset, and as we just mentioned, he listened to those guys as well and take their input.
Correct. I agree.
Let's talk coaching here. The Nuggets making an interesting move, hiring Mike Malone over the players' coach. This was the spot that was vacated by Brian Shaw, who was fired in the midseason and replaced by Melvin Hunt. But then was it Michael Malone or Mark Malone? Did I say that correctly? Anyway, we'll get to that. So then he comes in. He had a small sample size with the Sacramento Kings. They're playing pretty good, but he got fired pretty quickly, so we don't know enough about it. So Rob, what's up with this move? Is this good move, bad move, hindsight? You know, what's going on this particular instance?
Well, I like Mike Malone as a coach. You know, obviously, in Denver, you have the high altitude, and most of the time you want to hire a coach that's going to come in and have a running philosophy so you can, you know, tire your opponents out in that altitude. And that's where I think the Denver fan base was actually looking for. And the players obviously wanted to keep Melvin Hunt. They were hoping that he'd be promoted to head coach. But personally, I followed Mike Malone for quite some time. He was assistant with Cleveland. under Mike Malone. I'm sorry, not Mike Malone, under Mike Brown. You know, he was assistant with him. He was a defensive guy in LeBron's early career. Of course, he was also with the New Orleans Hornets for quite some time. And but he's been a very good defensive coach for quite some time. And I like him as a basketball coach. He's going to have to get a good offensive mind in there to come over there and help him, you know, as a head coach. So it'll be interesting to see who he brings in as an assistant. But I think when you look at the pool of coaches that are out there, other than the time Thibodeau or Jeff Van Gundy, and neither one of those guys had an interest in a Denver Nuggets job, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better candidate out there than Mike Malone, just my personal opinion. So I give the hire a B.
Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, I agree, and I would almost give it a B plus to an A minus because those people that want you to run never look at the flip side of the equation. You can run a team out of the gym as well, but you want, it's like a prize fight in the sense that sometimes when you slug out with a team, you hit them with a whole lot of body punches. That can tire a team out as well. So you don't have to run them off the gym to tire them out. You can pound them. You can pound them. You can pound them in that high altitude, and come the fourth quarter, guess what? They're still tired. So if you look at it from the flip side of slowing it down and slugging them to death, which he can do, but he's got to get, like I agree, he's got to get a good offensive coordinator. But, you know, you can approach it that way as well. And the other piece of it is, yeah, you know, it's all well and good to run up and down the court and score a lot of points. But doing that, you made some playoffs, but did you win a championship? And my answer to that is you didn't win a championship. So if you didn't win a championship with that, why are you so hell-bent on making that be your style of choice if it didn't win you a title? So give somebody that has some pedigree, like Rob just spoke to, a chance before, you know, you throw him under the bus before you even had a chance, you know, to install his scheme and see what it does for your team. And that's a team that I think needed a lot of discipline. This is the same team that said 1, 2, 3, 6 weeks. You know, they need somebody to come in there and lay down a law with them and set a hierarchy and a structure. And I think Mike Malone would do that.
Love it, love it, love it. Let's talk about some moves that have happened. We've got about about 8 minutes left here. I do want to get to the mock draft for the NBA, and we'll spend some time in the OT talking about mini camps, it looks like. But real quick, there was a little move that happened. The Hornets trading Lance Stephenson to the Clippers for Spencer Hawes and for Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes finally gets out of L.A., I guess, after he made some comments about somebody's mom. So maybe that helped him out, but no. But what does this say for the Clippers? I mean, and JQ, I'm gonna start with you, man. This was a pretty interesting move because the Clippers, they made, you know, one of the colossal failures in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Here. What's happening with this move? I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
So a couple of things. On the surface, it looks like a garbage in, garbage out trade. You have Matt Barnes, who's irritated Doc Rivers to, you know, hell and beyond. So he was eager to get rid of him. And then you have Halls, who signed a big contract, who underwhelmed. And then you have Stevenson, who signed a decent contract, who underwhelmed. So it's like, you take my trash, I'll take your trash. But I like the upside better for the Clippers because I think Stevenson has the higher ceiling. But, and also for the Clippers, I believe that next year is a team option so they can get out of it, where Hall still has 3 years left on his deal. So I like it more for the Clippers because the only way they could improve was through trade because they're pretty much maxed out. And if they can get Stevenson to come close to what he was doing in Indiana, I think that's a steal for them. So you put him playing better with a CP3, with a Blake Griffin, and if you can keep Jordan at a decent price,
DeAndre Jordan.
Then you still have a decent nucleus even in the Western Conference to make another run. For Charlotte, you know, I think it's more about Halls, and they need that. What we talked about before with the whole Frank the Tank piece. In Wisconsin, he has that ability to draw the big man out and shoot the three, but he's got to come back and play more like he played in Philadelphia. But for me, I think it's a bigger win for the Clippers just on upside, because I think Stevenson has the talent. He just has to get out his own way.
Rob Ford?
I totally agree. I would have to say on paper here, the Clippers are the winner in this trade. And, you know, the Clippers' problem last year was the lack of depth. And so some people may say, well, if you already lack depth, why would you trade two players for one? Spencer Hawes wasn't giving you anything anyway. So I don't think you're going to lose anything with getting rid of Spencer Hawes. And Matt Barnes, at best, is a role player. And I totally agree. If Lance Stephenson can give them anything close to what he was given in Indiana, you got yourself another solid fourth option on this ball club. To go with, you know, if you wind up keeping DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, and Chris Paul. I think you give yourself another fourth starter because, you know, in my opinion, this team has three quality players in their starting lineup and two guys that should be coming off the bench in their starting lineup. I think with Stevenson, you give yourself another fourth player who's really a quality starter if he's giving you anything close to what he gave you in Indiana. So I definitely like this trade for the Clippers. And if you're the Hornets, you have to be scratching your heads on this trade, in my opinion. But I know Stevenson had a rough year in Charlotte, and so they're trying to unload that contract.
Good calls. Let's get to the mock draft, man, because right now, and we're watching, there's been moves going back and forth here. Still seems like, you know, the Warriors are trying to hold off and Cleveland's making moves, but then we're going to kind of keep an eye on this if the Warriors can pull away, which it does seem like they're going to do here. Even the Cavs are putting up some little mini runs here. Rob, mock draft 3.0, I've noticed a couple of things that you've changed for this particular draft. The top stays the same. The top three picks seem to stay the same here. Nothing has changed for that much to Jake Hughes' demise. I'm not even a fan of Okafor here, but
no.
You know, do you want to highlight anything that you've had that you think have happened? I know that it looks like you've made, and I'm going to follow this because I'm an Atlanta fan, you've made an interesting move putting Cameron Payne, a very impressive guard from Murray State. Not sure if we need a point guard, Rob, but is there anything you wanted to talk about in this particular mock draft? And I'm going to ask you about Cameron Payne and how come we don't get a big man in that draft. Go ahead, sir. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Well, just a couple of notes, you know, in regards to this particular mock draft. Obviously, the top four is pretty much still the same. But I will say just a couple of quick notes. Minnesota is, you know, right now still having Tinker Towns. They're giving Okafor a strong look. They're trying to make sure they make the best decision here in this draft. And but I'll even say with the Lakers, they are seriously giving D'Angelo Russell a strong look as well. So, I mean, there's still a lot to change here in this next week. And so, you know, what's real funny is Minnesota is giving Okafor another look. The Lakers are giving Russell here another look. And so we'll see what happens in that. A few other notes. You know, I did move Frank Kaminsky up to number 9 to Charlotte at this point. I've been mostly having him between 12 and 15 in previous mock drafts. I did move him up to 9 there to the Charlotte Bobcats. I'm sorry, they're the Hornets now. That's right. Move him up to number 9. You mentioned Cameron Payne. You know, he's 6'2", but he's really more of a combo guard. He's kind of a player that can come off the bench and probably score for you like an old Vinnie Johnson microwave-type player.
Okay,
and,
microwave.
And that's what you're going to be getting with a guy like Cameron Payne. In my last mock draft, I had the Hawks taking Bobby Portis, and they can still possibly go that route. Bobby Portis is a 6'11 power forward who can actually step outside and hit 20-foot jump shots, too. So he's got range, too. I know he's another guy that the Hawks like. So that's another player that you could possibly look at for the Hawks at number 15. Tyus Jones, I moved him up to number 18 to Houston. Houston desperate need for a point guard there, even though I think Tyus Jones is really a backup point guard in the NBA. But I think he can be a solid backup for years to come. Jerry and Grant like him a lot as well. Got him going 21 to Dallas. And, you know, he could be the Rondo possibly replacement. Rondo definitely won't be back in Dallas next year. R.J. Hunter, you know, right here in Atlanta, got him going to Memphis at number 25. And I know J.Q. is a Lakers fan, so I have them taking DeLon Wright, combo guard from Utah. Probably could be a nice pair down the road with the kid from Missouri. In the backcourt. So you know, that's one to watch as well. So I don't know if y'all have any other questions about any of the rest of the draft, but those are just some of my highlights.
Hold that real quick, JQ, because we've got 40-something seconds, Rob. Can you set us up for the OT portion? We'll keep going with that. We'll have JQ's thoughts, and then we'll also talk about some some NFL stuff. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, I tell you, time flies when you're having fun. Join us next Tuesday night, same time, same channel, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll recap the NBA Finals. We'll get you ready for the NBA Draft. We're getting you ready for NFL and college football season, too. So join us on next week. Click on the same link on tomorrow to listen to our OT portion. We're still talking NBA, and we got some NFL and college football, too. So tune in to our OT portion on tomorrow. Good night, people.
Sorry, Cleveland.
I was waiting for him to say stay classy. That's what I was waiting for.
Oh, man.
I love today. Gotta give Ohio
Cleveland lose. Cleveland lose tonight and go back to being a mistake by the lake.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, I love a mistake by the lake. I love it, man. JQ, anything you want to say for the NBA mock draft for Rob's 3.0 draft, sir?
Yeah, so I agree with most of that. I think a lot of times when you see them giving the other players individual workouts, I think they do that sometimes as a smokescreen to say, hey, if you want this guy, we might take him. So will you come up and try to trade with us and we pick up another second-round pick or another first-round pick in a future draft? A couple of things. Charlotte, with Frank Kaminsky, do you think they still take Kaminsky now that they traded for Halls? Because, you know, they kind of duplicate the same thing, so I don't know if you can take Kaminsky after you've gotten Halls, if they're going to play the same position and you got to pay Halls that kind of money, do you want to draft somebody at nine that you're basically going to bring off the bench? But I can see them doing it because, you know, Mike is prone to do anything, but it's possible. And for Philadelphia, one more last thing. Philadelphia, I wonder with the news about Embiid's foot, if they don't make a run at Minnesota and L.A. with all those 30 second-round picks they have, where they try to move up into the first or second slot to try to draft a big man, because I read a report today where they said Embiid might miss next season as well because his foot is not healing as expected. So if you know that you drafted Embiid and he's not going to play, do you gamble a little bit to try to move up from 3-2 or maybe even 3-1 to draft one of the top two big men in the draft? So that's just my 2 cents from the revision.
Yeah, you just don't historically see those kind of trades in the NBA draft. So that would be interesting if they was pull off a trade like that. That would be interesting. You know, second round picks, of course, you know, they rarely make a roster in the NBA. You know, typically down the road they could possibly come back, you know, as far as making somebody roster after playing in a development league. So that would be interesting if Philly was able to move up and grab one of those players. But, you know, Nerland Noel's had a heck of a year, so if they can somehow get he and Joel Embiid on a court together, you're going to have two athletic shot blockers on the court and two guys that can really run the floor. But who knows? I don't know what Philly is doing, and I don't know what they're doing with the Eagles, and I don't know what they're doing with the 76ers. It seems like both of them making questionable moves. So, sorry, Philadelphia. So, I couldn't even understand the trade they made last year with Michael Carter Williams. I didn't really understand that one as well. So I'm still a little confused what the 76ers are trying to accomplish here and with some of their moves there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
It's just they have so many second round picks. Is the fact that if I give you six of them, you know, and you hit on maybe one or two.
You got to figure you're going to hit on
one or
two. You
get you a Draymond Green. Yeah, so if you get a Draymond Green and somebody else, we hit on two of those six to swap places and maybe another future first-round pick down the line, would the Lakers and Minnesota think about it? Because, I mean, I'm a Laker fan, but unless they sign somebody in free agency, there's still a bit of ways because Kobe's going to go away. So, and then with Minnesota, they seem like they're eternally rebuilding. So I don't know what you can convince them. And I'm not, you know, super enthusiastic about their brain trust in either one of those. You know, Buster Sun is an idiot. And then, you know, Flip Saunders has so much on his plate being the coach and, you know, the GM that could you talk them into, you know, a first round or 3 years down the line and 5 second round picks to move up a slot or two slots. So I agree. It typically doesn't happen. But when you have Minnesota and Philadelphia involved in the first three picks, nothing surprises me.
Yeah. And there's some good players in this draft. I haven't really released my second round mock. But there really are some good players that are going to be picked in this 31 to 40 part of the second round that I think has a real chance of making some teams. You know, after that, I think it starts to thin out a little bit. But I really think there's going to be some good players that's going to get picked between 31 and 40 in this particular NBA draft as well. So if you can get some second round picks in that range, I think you may get a few players.
Great.
Wow. Good call stuff, man. So, guys, man, I'm kind of letting the show kind of, like, you know, take life on there so that you guys have that moment here. let's kind of switch gears. Let's talk about some NFL stuff. Some NFL camps have opened up. We got a lot of questions to get through really quickly here, so I'm just going to fire these off real quick, and then I do want to save some time for Russell Wilson because we're going to talk about that contract situation from him too. But real quick, we're going to just fire these off real quick. You guys answer, you know, hopefully you can be pretty quickly here, and we can have a good little section here. I'm going to start off with we've got who's going to replace Steven Jackson as the starting running back for the Falcons. It's going to be Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. That's my call for that too. So, Rob, what do you think about this real quick, sir?
Well, I would have to agree with that. I think these, I think they're going to take the two-headed monster approach as far as the running back for the Falcons. So, I mean, you hit it right on the nail. Those are the two backs. I figure they're going to. I think they want to have Freeman more as a third down back, and hopefully Coleman yep. can be your main first and second down guy. But I think yep. they're going to take the two-headed monster approach for the Falcons.
JQ?
Totally agree with that.
Man, rookies contributing for the Buccaneers. Is it going to be Jameis Winston that's going to come out the gate, or are we talking about some of the offensive linemen? The Buccaneers had a pretty interesting draft. JQ, on you real quick, sir.
It's all about Jameis Winston. For everybody else that roots for Tampa Bay, nothing else matters. I mean, you need to have protection. Don't get me wrong with those offensive linemen. But the first thing they need to do is tell him to put some pants on so he can get in the club. But I think it's got to be Jameis Winston. It's got to be him. He's got to be the face of the franchise. And I mean, he's going to have his ups and downs because he's a rookie. But he has to show that flash and show it consistently to where he can get them energized about it. So it's all about Winston. It's Winston the bus.
Pants in the club. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Even though Winston is running the second team offense now right now, he's going to be the starter come opening day. He's a franchise. You got to give the football to him from day one. Obviously, they got a couple other rookies, left tackle Devin Smith from Penn State. I believe he's going to start from day one. And I believe Ali Marpet from Hobart, I believe
Marpet.
He's going to start at right guard as well from day one as well. And Quan Alexander, the fourth-round pick from LSU, I think he's got a great chance to start a strong side linebacker as well. So they may have four of their draft picks starting on day one for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The two offensive linemen, Winston or Givens, Quan Alexander is in the fight, but I think he's got a strong chance as well to be the strong side starting linebacker.
First round pick Eric Flowers. Is he ready to start at the left tackle for the Giants, Rob? What about him, Eric Flowers? What about this move?
Well, the Giants, their plan was to hopefully start him at right tackle in year one. Will Beatty was scheduled to be the starting left tackle, but Beatty's got a pectoral injury. He's going to keep him out to November. And so now the Giants have no choice but to try to force Flowers into the left tackle spot as a rookie. So they're trying to do everything they can to get him ready to start at left tackle from day one. And, I mean, obviously this hurts their initial plan of starting him out at right tackle. So we'll see, if he'll be ready to play. I mean, he's a ninth overall pick. You hope he can make that transition right away.
JQ?
My answer will be no, but I think by mid-season he'll grow into it. He'll have to have a faster learning curve, but ask for somebody to step in at left tackle in this day and age in the NFL is asking for a whole lot to be successful right out the gate. But I think he'll eventually get there, but maybe not week one.
Let's see. He's going to replace DeMarco Murray, a starting running back in Dallas. You've got McFadden. You've got a couple guys here. Who's going to start, Rob?
Right now, Joseph Randle is far and away above Darren McFadden right now, battling a hamstring injury. Ryan Williams battling a knee injury. So Joseph Randle is getting all the work with the first team, and he's running away with it right now. Obviously, we still have training camp to come and see if those guys can get healthy. But right now, it's Randle's job to lose, and those other guys will offer some support in relief mode.
Ray Rice. No, I'm just playing.
Oh, Adrian Peterson. No,
I think it's just gonna be a running back. I think it's gonna be a running back by committee. I'm not really enthused by any of them, but I still think that Jerry Jones is gonna try to give it to Darren McFadden because he's pig suey and he's a fan first and foremost before he's a GM in my book. So I think it's gonna be McFadden at the end of the day. But we all know about his injury history. So I'm not confident in any of those guys.
I agree with you, JQ. Who's going to start at QB for the Eagles? Man, Sam Bradford. No, I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to say Tim Tebow. Sanchez.
Stop it.
It's craziness. I haven't said it in a couple weeks. You got to be honest, guys. But no, who's going to start? I don't trust Sam Bradford, but Lord have mercy. What's going to happen? Who's going to start? Go ahead, JQ.
I'm just going to say, in the thing of brevity, I'm just going to say Sanchez. He already knows the offense, and he didn't look terrible last year. He didn't look great, but he didn't look terrible. And I think if he can't win that job in minicamp, given that he already has a leg up on everybody else, then, I mean, what else can you say?
Got you. Rob Ford.
I totally agree. Mark Sanchez is the guy. I mean, Sam Bradford has still got a history of getting being very injury-prone. And, you know, I'm not going to even call somebody's name out. But, you know, he doesn't have a shot. And then you mentioned Matt Barkley. Come on. I mean, it's Sanchez's job to lose.
Who's going to start for QB for the Patriots during Tom Brady? Is it going to be Dom Grady that's going to start for the Patriots? Go ahead, Rob.
I think they're going to give Jimmy Garoppolo a chance at that job. I know they just signed Matt Flynn to come out and do some help. But I think the Garoppolo has shown some talent. You know, I think they want to give him a strong look in those four games. And Matt Flynn will offer some veteran support as a backup. I'm thinking they're going to go with Garoppolo.
Real quick,
totally
JT,
agree.
What do you think, sir? Okay.
Totally agree.
QB for the Bills, this is just another cluster. What do you say, Rob? I don't know. I got nothing for this one. 4 minutes, by the way.
Well, I mean, I know you got Matt Castle there, but I'm thinking they're gonna give Emmanuel another shot at this job here. I mean, you spent the first round pick on him. I think they're gonna give him another strong look as a starter of his team. And you got Matt Castle as a veteran there to offer some support. I think they're gonna give EJ Manuel another strong look to win this job. I think he starts day one.
Totally agree.
Thank you. Nice.
Totally agree.
Wrapping up, man, got 3 minutes left and the Warriors are pulling away. How comfortable is Johnny Manziel in the new offense? JQ, any thoughts about this real quick? Up north
He's just honestly, not to be mean, but that guy's just trying to stay sober right now. So anything else is secondary. He's got to get his life together first before I start worrying about him in the offense. So, I mean, uncomfortable is what I would say.
Good call. Good call. Rob?
Josh McCown is going to be the starter for that team the entire season. Manziel is just not ready. I thought it was a reform where he got picked, and I think he's still got some physical liabilities. He doesn't have a strong arm. He can't throw in the tight windows. And I tell you what, if Russell Wilson did not have the success he had coming out, I think Manziel would not have gotten drafted as high. I just do not see him as an NFL quarterback.
Wow. Speaking of Russell Wilson, Rob, we got 2 minutes. I need you guys to be really succinct here. Does the contract situation turn ugly? I'm hoping no, and we're going to talk about this next week. Keep this on the table list for next week, guys, because I'm going to – if Russell Wilson is the guy or he's part of a product of a good system. But real quick, Rob, you got to do 20 seconds on this about this contract situation real quick.
I'm going to say they get it fixed. You just can't let a guy like that who's been your starting quarterback and been successful to take you to 2 Super Bowls. I think they get it fixed in Seattle.
Okay. JQ.
I agree with that totally. I think it's a joke that they let it get to this point. I understand you're taking care of your defense, and that's what you're hanging your hat on, but this guy has just been a leader. You got to remember that you brought other guys in there to beat him out for this job, and he won it, and you had to end up cutting them, Matt Flynn. So give the man his money.
Love it, love it, love it. All right, 2 minutes. Golden State is pulling away, guys, man. It looks like they're going to pull us off, man. So, Rob, finish this
looks
up.
It's like Cleveland's giving up. They just let Curry go straight to the paint.
And it's over, man. It's over. They've reached their pinnacle. Go ahead, Jet. Go ahead, Rob. Let's set it up here, sir.
Throw in the damn towel. Sorry.
My bad. Tuesday night next week, people, we'll be back on the air next Tuesday night. You don't want to miss it. Congratulations. Look like congratulations on the order to the Golden State Warriors on being the NBA champion. They were the best team all season, so definitely well-deserved. We'll be back on the air next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll recap the NBA season, get you ready for the draft. We're going to get you ready for NFL and college football season two. We're going to start making conference predictions in college football, so you don't want to miss that on next week tonight.
O-H-I-O. Stay classy, San Diego.
that is how we end it. I think we finally got it figured out, America. That is what it's all about. Thank you guys for listening in. Fellas, what a great night.